I'm Lynn Sharon for Celeste here with John. And as we've been telling you all morning, the census starts today. Da-dum-da-dum. You are being asked a series of questions about your household and yourself. And one of the goals is to identify demographic changes that require long-term government planning, in particular, population growth.
Or as the case may be, non-growth.
Not growth. There you go. Because, as my pal John points out, across America, dozens of towns have seen their population shrink in the past years. For cities like Detroit and Cleveland, the demographic decline started well before the economic downturn. And for others, like Las Vegas, it's all brand new. Last week, Kansas City's Board of Education voted to shut down nearly half its schools in the main school district. And also last week, the mayor of Detroit announced that the city will demolish thousands of its vacant homes for good.
You know, Lynn, some friends of ours from Kansas City actually visited this weekend. They were saying that while the schools are shutting down in the main school district, just across the border in some of the suburbs of Kansas City, they're actually growing and adding schools.
Well, because it's the urban areas that are the ones that are shrinking. So the idea we're going to discuss now, make that shrinking city not only survive, but thrive. And here to talk to us about this, Hunter Morrison, an urban planner in Youngstown, Ohio. He was one of the leading architects of Youngstown 2010, a comprehensive planning effort to make the city smaller, greener, and cleaner. Ed Glazer is a professor of economics at Harvard and director of the Taubman Center for State and Local Government. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Good morning.
So let me start with you, Hunter. This whole concept of downsizing just feels drastic. We've been taught for years, big is good, growth is wonderful. And your city, Youngstown, lost, 5.4% of its population between 2000 and 2007. So it's, you know, and you were, but forgive me, I have to say you were first in a survey of America's downsized city conducted by Forbes last year. Heck of a distinction. So let's talk about this. How bad is it really?
Well, the Youngstown story is really the story of many of this Great Lakes cities. It's lost about half its population since its peak. It's comparable to Detroit and Cleveland. The real distinguishing difference is it's acknowledged that fact and accepted that it is smaller than it was, and it's going to be better as a smaller city as opposed to trying to simply go back to size. That then occasions up a whole set of initiatives in terms of what do you keep, what do you demolish, how can you concentrate on the areas that have opportunity, how can you get more focus in your work in the neighborhoods and in the downtown. How can you leverage your assets like your universities and your hospitals and your government centers?
So this is taking something that feels like it's a bad thing but might be a good thing. Ed Glazer, let me ask you, how many American cities have gone through this kind of major loss of population in the past few years?
Well, it's a half-century phenomenon. 8 of the 10 largest American cities in 1950 have at least 20% less population today than they did then. And, you know, Detroit has been losing population decade after decade since the immediate post-war period. Urban decline is in some sense, almost the norm in the Midwest and the Northeast.
Hunter Morrison, let's talk about Youngstown specifically. Tell us about Youngstown 2010. How has Youngstown changed as a result of this plan?
Well, the fundamental change has been in the attitude. About 7 years ago, we first announced the Youngstown 2010 vision, which included accepting the fact that we're a smaller city and reframing the goal to be a sustainable mid-sized city, adjusting ourselves to the new regional and global economy, addressing quality of life, quality of place, and taking action. And those have been the four pillars of the effort. Those have really sustained a series of initiatives on the part of the city, of county, state delegations at the state and congressional level, and also our university.
Was it traumatic? So, was it a traumatic thing to do that?
Actually, 1,500 people came out to Stambaugh Auditorium when we first announced this approach, which really bubbled up from a whole series of focus groups and group meetings. And 3 years later, 1,300 people showed up. This is actually an initiative that is popular and generated from people's broad understanding that going back to being a steel capital wasn't the way to go forward, and a new way had to be found.
It almost sounds as if you're re-embracing a small-town America ideal.
Well, that's a very good way to look at it. The value of a place like Youngstown is it is a small town, and it has a real intimacy, and it has neighborhoods which have real quality and parks that are quite beautiful. How do we focus as a community on what we do well, what we value as a people and as a place, and how we project an image forward to ourselves and to the world that is, in fact, an attractive image as opposed to a sad sack image.
Ed Glaser at Harvard, how much does it cost when a city wants to downsize?
Well, it's we need to separate out what downsizing means, because there really are different types of downsizing. One type of downsizing is the type that you discussed in Kansas City, which is just shuttering urban facilities. That's, you know, entirely seen as being a cost-saving measure, right? You're not keeping open as many schools as you once did. Kansas City is actually a little bit odd, because Kansas City actually has gained population since 1990, at least according to the census. So Kansas City is a little bit strange that Kansas City is finding itself in the forefront of the downsizing movement. The second thing is what Mayor Bing has discussed, which is actually not providing city services in some parts of the city. Again, that feels very radical, although if you look across America...
That means what? That means bus lines and stuff like that?
You know, he hasn't been precise. I don't know if that means bus lines. I don't know if that means garbage removal. But there are large swaths of America where you're responsible for having your own garbage picked up, and you're responsible for your own water provision. So it may be less radical than it seems. And again, it's seen as a cost-saving measure. The real money involved comes when you're actually going to start tearing down buildings. And again, there's a continuum here of, you know, there's very little sort of public controversy over tearing down those buildings that are empty, dilapidated, and obvious health risk there. It's just an issue of spending the thousands of dollars that are needed to tear them down, versus the larger ambition, which is, look, you're going to tear down an entire neighborhood, and a neighborhood that still has people living in it. And that's where this thing really has bite and becomes, you know, more challenging, more politically challenging, and much more expensive.
And clearly this is an issue we will be revisiting. Ed Glaser, professor of economics at Harvard, Hunter Morrison, urban planner in Youngstown, Ohio. We're going out on Youngstown.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.